Would you give your mum, dad, aunt or that uncle who hugged your partner a little too long free access to your phone?
Oh, no!
Oh, my God, it's a really long video. Ew!
In Dave's brand new YouTube original, Get Off My Phone, we've got six comedians to give their phones over to a relative with total freedom to read messages, DMs, photos and browser history.
Where's your search history?
Sorry?
What to do, tips for relief.
The rules are simple. Their relative can read anything they want and even make calls from the comedian's phone.
What is this?
What is... I don't want this one.
That looks really bad.
Starring Tanya Moore, Anya Magliano, Finlay Christie, Travis J with his mum Angie Lamar, Hayley Morris, Grace Campbell and dad Alistair Campbell.
Slightly sexually compromising
people. Divulging their deepest digital secrets.
What the hell is happening?
Get Off My Phone, a Dave YouTube original. Available now on Dave's YouTube channel.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet Plush Care, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Conversations Against Living Miserably, a podcast where we try to find solace in a world where our brains are usually against us.
My name is Aaron Gillis and each week I'll be joined by...
me, Lauren Patterson. Each week we chat to different guests about how they try and live their life without misery. But we try and do it with a little bit of laughter because otherwise that sounds like a pretty gloomy idea for a podcast.
This podcast is brought to you in partnership with Dave, the TV channel, and Calm, the campaign against living miserably. Hello, hi, morning, welcome, hi, hello, episode 23. Welcome back to Conversations Against Living Miserably, which is a podcast that supports Calm, the campaign against living miserably, which is a suicide prevention charity. And all of the money that we make from adverts that you listen to at the beginning, middle and end of the podcast, all of the money we make from that goes directly to them. So by listening today, you are donating to a fantastic charity. We do talk about some subjects today that obviously relate to that subject. So if you do need some extra information, you can go to calmzone.net, thecalmzone.net even. And they have helplines and very useful information there. And you can also just kind of give some money and fundraise that way as well. The more money we raise, the more people the helpline can save. So that's why we're doing this. Anyway, this week's guest is Rose Matafeo. Rose is a comedian, writer and actress who can be seen on the current series of Taskmaster. Which, if you're not watching Taskmaster, you need to go watch Taskmaster because it's bloody brilliant. And I'm not just saying that because this podcast is sponsored by Dave. In 2018, Rose won the Edinburgh Comedy Award for Best Show for a show, Horn Dog, which is absolutely fantastic. And if you do ever get a chance to see her do that show again, I'm not sure if she is ever going to do that show again. But if you get a chance, go see it. It's absolutely brilliant. This week, we speak to Rose about spicy depression, openness, and escape rooms. Yep, it's a weird sentence, isn't it? Right, that's probably enough of me rabbiting on at you for the moment, so I'm going to rabbit on in the next bit. This is Lauren and myself talking to Rose Matafeo.
We are joined on today's episode by the wonderful Rose Matafeo.
Hi.
Hello and welcome.
Hey, what's a good good fact about my last name in Spanish? Mm-hmm. I'm not Spanish, but it means kill the ugly person.
Ooh.
Kill ugly person. Kill ugly. Yeah.
Does it? That is amazing.
It means like mata is to kill and fail. Yeah. And every time I went through customs in LA recently, mm-hmm. and the guy was like, hey, yeah, say your last name for me. And I was like, Matafeo. And he was like, hey, take it easy. And I was like, oh, good jokes in LA. customs. Don't shoot me, please.
Oh, that control banter.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for having me, guys.
No, our pleasure.
Thank you very much for coming in. We kick off with a very tame question, depending, which is, when was the last time you felt calm?
Oh, my gosh, this is the worst question of my life. I'm thinking about this. Well, look, I don't know if I'm a calm person. You know what's so weird, actually? The last time I felt calm, you know where I feel really weirdly calm? Is escape rooms.
Really?
Because I wouldn't describe myself as calm basically at any point mm-hmm. in my life. Perhaps directly after a gig, like directly after I get on stage. Or I remember like one time or a beach one once a couple of years ago. Yeah, a couple of years back. But no, I find escape rooms incredibly calming because I feel like I've got nothing else to focus on but things in front of me.
It's like a set aim.
Totally. There's an aim. There's a goal.
There's pressure there as well to do it before the time.
Totally. Which, yeah. Again, I wouldn't say it was stress. It was, it was pre-pressure. But just feeling calm because I'm like, well, I don't have to... Like, I am locked in a room. Like, I don't have to answer any email or talk to anyone else. And these are the people I'm talking to. And I've got one goal. So, yeah, I do feel incredibly calm in escape rooms.
Are you good at escape rooms?
I think so. Yeah, I've got an escape room team. Ooh. And we go around the escape rooms in London and pay quite illegal fees, basically, illegally high fees to be grown-ups paying money to be locked into rooms. We should be the first to die in an apocalypse. We deserve it because we're absolute nerds. But yeah, no, I think I've done quite a few of them. I reckon I'm up there in the like probably nearly 50 escape rooms in my life.
That is champ level.
Nice. Yes, it is champ level.
And the fact you're here proves you're good at them.
Exactly. I mean, this is kind of an escape room in itself. It's like, am I going to say the right answers so I get let out of the studio? I think last time I felt calm was in an escape room.
I could imagine you getting really wound up in an escape room.
Thank you.
I don't think an escape room would be your vibe.
Have you never done one?
I've done a couple. I did one for a stag do once.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's kind of a nightmare.
Yeah, it was awful.
Because people you don't know.
Yeah.
You can't do it with people you don't know.
No, and they were with like a different group of friends who were all very laddie.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not like that. So they all got very angry and competitive straight away. And it was me and my other mate just kind of sat in the corner getting stressed. And I don't like tight spaces. I don't like things being against the clock. And I don't like the dark. So I'm
good. Well, that's ding, ding, ding. Tick, tick, tick.
I imagine you're very competitive. So.
Yeah, because I'm competitive and I like logic.
Yeah.
Because I don't think, maybe I'm quite like you, I'm not a very calm person in day-to-day life, but there's something about an escape room where you're like, but I have to be logical.
Totally.
I have to, because there is one set way to do this.
I get quite bossy in escape rooms as well.
Yeah.
I'm jittery, easily scared, but also bossy. So it's like, it's a very strange thing to try and be a leader when you're constantly screaming at the slightest noise. You're like, and you're like, okay, you need to do that, you need to do that. But I think you need a leader in an escape room.
Yeah, people's true colours come out in an escape room.
I do escape rooms with Ed Gamble, and Ed Gamble and Charlie, his partner, and another comic, Amy Annette, and we are all very different vibes in escape rooms. I've been known to yell at Ed. Actually, the other way around. Ed yells at me.
Yeah. I was going to say.
Ed yells at me. But the thing is, in an escape room, Ed yells, but what happens in an escape room stays in an escape room.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like when you're doing the team tasks, you all just seem to get on quite nicely.
Absolutely. But then it was kind of escape room vibes of like, I can see it. Like, because when we're running to place all excited, it's like, oh no, this is it coming through. But yeah.
Was that the one where you spent 30 minutes running around in between all the different tasks?
But he got angry at me.
Yeah,
that one.
That's what made me
think. He got angry when that thing fell off my head. It was just like, that's your fault. That was on you. And I'm like, come on, man. Sitting for a minute, like having to hum the Taskmaster theme tune on the bench was probably like the most excruciating minute. It was just Ed staring like daggers at me. It was awful. But yeah. It was good, but no, yeah, that's probably when I felt the most calm.
Do you ever have a sense of calm when you're on stage, or is it only when you leave
Absolutely
stage?
Absolutely not. Yeah. well, it's an interesting question. No, I actually think I experienced calm for the first time ever, like last week, doing a show, and it was probably the only sense of calm I've ever had because it was like a full room, and they all were there to see me, which I think I've gone through all my life. life doing stand-up, being in the position where you have to impress this crowd of people who do not know who you are. And so it happened when I first, you know, I moved to England again, where it was like I've been doing stand-up for like years and years in New Zealand, and then I had to start from scratch again, not completely from scratch, because I had really good friends who got me into really nice gigs, but it was always this thing of like, you have to impress people, you have to impress people, and you know, no one knows who you are, and like to do for the first time, feel like you were doing a gig and people were on your side.
Yeah.
Like, because it always seems like stand-up is like a, not a combative thing, but it is like a negotiation of sorts. So I think that you can get complacent if you get too used to that and you just get like boring and bad at comedy if there's not that sense of jeopardy to it. But I did feel a certain calm and I felt incredibly uncomfortable with it.
Oh, really?
I came off stage and I texted my friend, she was like, how's the show? And I was like, it was great. They really enjoyed it. It was fun. I didn't like it. Like, in terms of, I didn't like the feeling of, there not being a fire lit under my ass in a way, because I think most of my stand-up relies on massive anxiety before it, and it is proving to become unsustainable. It really is. I think it's just, you know, I really wish I was a stand-up who didn't require feeling like that before a show to like make me do well. I don't know if you feel that ever. Do you feel that? Like to work hard or like to feel like you might perform well, there needs to be an element beforehand going, okay, well, this could go wrong, this could go wrong.
Definitely. If the gig goes easy, and by easy, I mean like, you know, you feel like you haven't had to work for it, I'm like, oh, well, that was obviously a shit crowd.
Yeah.
And I can't accept that. Maybe I just did a good job. And I'm like, nah, clearly that was a really easy crowd. I never just let myself sort of get that, because I know some comics would be like, yeah, smash it. And then they'll get maybe a bit lazy. But I think when you've got that constant state of anxiety and doubt, you're always like, no, I am never good enough.
That's the problem. Yeah. Sorry. That's a problem of like, I think stand-up, because it's such a lonely existence where it's like you are self-correcting all the time. You're your first critic in terms of like, you don't have a director, you know, like every time you just say, you are doing that. You're writing it, performing it, then critiquing yourself to try and become better. And I think that voice in your head, that critical voice, so easily grows into something that's like kind of awful, because you're having to be critical of stuff in order to get better. And I completely believe that you should always push yourself to be better. I find that it's turned into a very hard voice on myself, and then sometimes seeps into other elements of your life that don't, and you're like, hang on, this is outside the professional bounds of stand up. Now you're thinking these things about other things.
And I'm in a Tesco.
Exactly. I'm telling myself I'm a piece of shit in Tesco for not having the right chin. Oh my God. Yeah, and I find that really interesting. But I agree, like, it's such a hard negotiation of, like, how far do you take that? Because I do think that some comedians aren't hard enough at all for themselves, and they should be better.
But it's a driver, isn't it? Anxiety is a driver. It always makes you want to strive to do your best that day. Yeah. The moment you turn up and think, I'm just going to crush this, you become complacent and lazy, and that's your energy's gone.
Yeah, it's so weird. But I think all performers deal with it like that. I mean, I talked to you know, my friend Guy Montgomery.
Yeah.
He's a New Zealand comedian, and I remember our approaches to stand up. I realized, I was like, oh my God, we approach it so differently, in that he sees every time to get up on stage and do a show as an opportunity to succeed. And in my mind, every time I think it's an opportunity to fail.
Yeah.
I go up there and I'm like, okay, cool. Well, this is going to go bad. So how can I mitigate that? And how can I really make the best out of a bad situation? And it's just like your frame of mind is just so, I mean, it's just depends on your personality, I suppose. But yeah, God.
Every club gig I do, I'm always going on stage like, well, this could be my last time here. Mm. Rather than like, oh my God, I'm doing the Comedy Store. I'm like, nope, this is going to be the one where they start booking me.
Oh my God. I know people who are like that though, in terms of like, but I think the similar ways of going, oh yeah, well, I'm going to give up now. It's so bad. I've got such poor resilience. If I have one bad gig and I'm like, well, I guess I can move back home and, you know, start an accountancy kind of course or something, have a backup. It is scary when you don't have a backup.
Oh, yeah.
A backup career or something.
What would your backup
really
career
hard.
Be?
Oh, you'd have plenty.
A trampoline court.
That'd be nice.
Is that a job?
It is now.
Honestly, I think you'd need to have a lot of skills.
You know those
in that.
Like trampoline bounce park things?
Oh, one of
like
those.
Kids' parties.
Yeah.
Yep.
I actually think I'd be really bad at that. I'd be scrabbling around the place, bouncing off, hitting my head on the spring somehow.
Yeah. Kids taking out kids
me.
Left and right.
Yeah, the kids would be like, boo. Yeah, I know, it's a tough thing. But I think, you know, maybe that's why stand-up is such a weird, unsustainable career. Unless you really curate it to work with your life and your personality. And that's bloody, it's, I find about stand-up, depending on what you kind of type you do, you're constantly examining yourself, and it suggests a level of self-awareness that you actually don't really possess. Like, you don't necessarily possess. Like, everyone thinks, oh my God, they know themselves, God. But they don't, you don't, we don't do anything about it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yes, I talk about all this personal stuff. I know who I am, and yet I don't do anything about it. Just because I'm talking loudly on stage with a microphone.
You have it as well, with being a younger comic. When people come up to you, like, normally women who are maybe like my mom's age, and they'll be like, oh, I wish I had your confidence when I was in my 20s. Oh, yeah. You've got your life together so early. I'm like, is this together?
Yeah.
Is this? Oh my God, because it's a mess.
Yeah. Totally. I think confidence thing is really interesting, of like people going, God, I couldn't do what you do. You got such confidence. Mm. And like, I feel like an absolute wreck, and it's just a thing to do in front of all of that shit as a front. You know what I mean? Like, I think yeah, I'm so different off. I'm just so different off stage.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just a different person, but actually an introvert. But no, but it's true. I find that very funny. I like it when people tell, yeah, they go, you got such confidence, and I can't make eye contact with them.
Drinking, you're like, oh, sweating absolutely. From my palms.
Yeah. I'm gonna go. I've had a strange gasm. I'm sorry. Yeah, it's,
I bet
it's
you're
weird.
So fun at parties. I'm like, I don't get invited to parties.
No,
because I'm not fun at them.
Oh my God, it's so, yeah, it's tough. You wouldn't want the person who's really fun at parties ever to do stand up. It'd be terrible.
Oh yeah, yeah. They need to have something wrong with them.
Absolutely. It's, yeah, no, completely.
When was the first time you became aware of mental health being a thing? Be it negative or positive?
Well, I feel like, I mean, again, like, we kind of grew up in a generation where it was kind of becoming more of a thing to be talking about and less kind of stigmatized and all of that. In New Zealand, I feel like. But I feel like I was on the cusp of it. Like, I feel like it's really cool and amazing that people, I mean, I guess younger people are much more aware of it. And I think those things are facilitated a bit more. I think I should know. We had a lot of support, I think, growing up in terms of at school and that. So I think probably from an early age, I mean, aware of how mental health statistics are pretty bad in New Zealand, where I'm, you know, from, and especially in like, you know, Māori and Pacific Island, indigenous kind of culture and stuff is really awful. And also I just became aware of it a lot in like art, like theatre and stuff, and people talking about that kind of stuff and pretty amazing stuff I saw when I was a younger kid. Mm. So probably around that. And then also being obsessed with comedy and reading that every comedian has struggled with it at some point. So, you know, having that interest at a very young age and those kind of people probably, you know, created an awareness of it. But yeah, probably then.
Is there a big difference in New Zealand compared to here, do you think, with like mental health, or are we both equally backwards with
absolutely
this?
Absolutely equally backwards. I mean, I think in terms of, it is interesting though, like, I think there's stuff specific, geographically specific to like in New Zealand, it's a lot of mental health issues that have been inherited because of like deep, like rooted in colonization of this, you know, island at the bottom of the world, which is a lot of mental health kind of stuff to deal with in indigenous communities, you know, and not only Māori people in New Zealand, but Polynesian people and, you know, or brown people in New Zealand, of just feeling incredibly, I don't know, isolated in a country that's, you know, it's similar in Australia, but it's pretty shameful histories of colonization. And I think a lot of people are doing work now to try and reverse that and try and, like, you know, or like look at it head on and see like the kind of trauma that has caused throughout the generations. And so that's probably a big one. But I mean, it's weird to think that, like, it's pretty much the same stuff, though. It's always, you know, repressed men, you know, like who don't talk about stuff, and that culture that kind of, you know, keeps things under wraps. Yeah, it's very interesting. New Zealand is an interesting place where it's inherited certain aspects of, like, I think in many ways from the UK, like, even like, you know, quite the humour is similar, you know, which is kind of self-deprecating, but we take it to another level of, in terms of like, we're self-deprecating and we're also got this cringe culture and tall poppy syndrome where it's like, we're never as good as anything else. And if you get too big for your boots, it's immediately you're cut down. And so people turn against you. And it actually is like a really, it seems like a funny, like, oh, that's classic what they're known for, tall poppy, but it actually is pretty pervasive amongst the culture in our country. And it goes back to maybe even like that thing in stand-up where it's like self-correcting, where it makes you better. It makes you better to like not think as much as yourself and be humble and stay humble. And but I just, yeah, it's really actually quite damaging, I think.
Indeed.
Damaging to people. But yeah, but I think it is the same, you know, crock of goddamn shit that we all just deal with. Yeah.
Thank you. Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
In Horn Dog, your award-winning show, you're quite open and honest about some aspects of the mental health and kind of your life and stuff. What made you want to take that onto the stage and bring that into your stand-up, that honesty and that revealing parts of your mind?
I genuinely didn't think about it. Like, I think maybe I'm just in some sort of liberal snowflake bubble where talking about, you know, your mental health and talking about that stuff is just so open and not an issue and not stigmatized at all, to the point when people probably overshare. Like, I think I overshare a thing, apparently, but I think I just share it in a normal amount. So it was never an active decision, like, where I'm like, I'm going to talk about this and this is going to be... Because then I think sometimes those things can sometimes be commodified, you know, or commercialized in a sense. There, it's like, it happens with every kind of movement of something where, you know, I think some people, like, jump onto it and, like, try and turn it into something or make money off it and all this stuff. And that gets frustrating. I think, though, in stand-up, like, you are just basically... you have to kind of, for me anyway, on observational stuff, you kind of have to observe yourself and who you are as a person. And so naturally that stuff will come up. Yeah. So, I'm pretty open about that stuff. And not to a degree of, like, I think a normal amount that most people experience. And so I like the fact that people can talk about, you know, naturally about going to therapy or, like, you know, seeing counselling. It's not even like a big, it's like a side.
Yeah.
And that's what it should be. Because it's like, oh yeah, I went to the doctor the other day and then we talked about this. And it's like, that's literally what it...
It's such an American thing, isn't it, to be so open about going to therapy?
But
in the UK, it's just kind of like, don't talk about that. It's my dark, shameful secret.
Yeah, isn't that funny? It totally isn't a difference with American comedians, where they just talk that everyone is doing it. Like, and it's so weird. It's so weird that it's in the UK, it's a bit less spoken about. I think there's a lot of comedians who could benefit from therapy in the UK.
Yeah.
That's great. I wasn't never an active decision. I think it's just an unavoidable aspect to touch on when you're doing a show about yourself and about that kind of stuff.
Have you always been open about it in your, like, about that as anxieties and stuff in your life?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, well, my first Edinburgh show I did was about my own funeral. And it was me planning my own funeral. And that came because I've always, you know, had a really preoccupied, I think everyone does really, a weird obsession with death or dying, or, like, I think a lot of people have it when they're young, and I had a lot when I was young, and it came back really strongly in my early 20s. Because of some, you know, events happening and stuff and all this stuff. And so I decided I'd do a funeral, which is, you know, and then I never, and I think it helped. I think it helped a bit to be flippant about something that I was, like, so, you know, anxious about and make jokes about it, which is quite fun and funny. It was such a stupid, stupid show.
Yeah.
I wore a tuxedo that said dead bitch on the back in Diamantes. And, like, you know, it was a real piss take of, like, and I had a coffin that I popped out of, and I was like, it was a very fun show.
Have you still got the jacket?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. So the outfit. And the coffin actually was a flat pack coffin, which I flew all around the world. And you'd put it together like an IKEA kit. my grandma, she took it to the airport with me And she checked it in. She was like, there's my granddaughter's coffin. My granddaughter's coffin. I'm just checking in. Really had a good time with them. But no, I think in that show, I talked a bit about seeing, just seeing counsellors and stuff at that time. And I did a joke about going to a therapist and them saying, and you've just got mild depression, it's fine. It's just a lot of mild depression. And I was like, that sounds about right. But it's just so funny when people speak about it in terms in which you would use, like, at a Nando's. You're about a chili and lime on a scale of depression.
Spicy
is
your depression.
Exactly. It's literally the Nando's spice chart of depression.
And just like the maximum spice, it will make you cry a lot.
Exactly.
Too much.
Exactly. And I think, it's a tough one as well, because I think I don't, I feel edgy about sometimes talking about that stuff, because I'm fully aware that I don't experience the extremes of those things, mm-hmm. of depression and anxiety and all that and that stuff. And I kind of wrestle with the idea of, like, should I even speak about that stuff, you know, or mention it on stage, because I'm not experiencing it at the worst degree, and am I just being a bit of a whiny bitch and just like, you know, I'm not, why I shouldn't talk about that stuff. And then I'm like, I think the very fact that I'm being this harsh on myself, that maybe means it up. Maybe I've got.
And also, it's just discussing the entire spectrum of it, because
totally.
You don't have to be right at the one end to be able to start talking about it.
Exactly.
You should be able to throughout the entire way. And
totally.
It just lets people know that there are, you can have small anxieties and big anxieties.
Totally.
It's not just like, don't wait until it becomes a massive thing and then.
Absolutely.
I did that, it didn't go well.
No. Identify it when it's at its lemon and herb.
Exactly.
That's what you need.
Catch it at lemon and herb.
Yep.
Just, you know, contain it, you know.
Don't let it get too spicy.
Yeah, don't let it get too spicy.
That's the next t-shirt for this podcast.
Great, you should do it.
Man,
that's
Top great. Shop missed the trick when they dropped their collection with that one.
Have you got your game ready? Every episode. This is my favourite bit.
What was a game?
I went and pretended to work in the office upstairs in between records, and I felt intimidated by people with real jobs. So I just had my notebook open and I ate a biscuit from in between the pages.
And you've still got crumbs.
Look, there's the crumbs.
Oh my God, amazing.
Why can I never find? I swear, there we go. Right, okay. So this is like an anxiety would you rather,
okay.
which I created as a fun bit of content, and it is stressing everyone out. So
eat a biscuit.
Loud a bit. There's also a weird stain on this page.
There's always stains.
That's the
sign of a good notebook, if there's a weird stain.
It looks like foundation. I'm like, why would I have been rubbing my notebook on my face? I'm just absorbing them sweet, sweet jokes. Would you rather never have enough time or have too much time to fill?
Never have enough time.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm with that one.
Absolutely. I think I always go, I'm always, when I'm busy, I'm like, oh, I wish I could just have a moment to sit down. And then you sit down and you're like, oh my God, I'm still here. Like, you're still here, like, and you're confronted with your own brain. And you're like, no. I actually had that. I went on holiday right after Edinburgh for 5 days. I was so lucky. I got to go to Greece, you know, and I say I got to go to Greece. I paid to go to Greece. Win a competition. I got to go to Greece. Someone paid, an anonymous donor. Paid me to go to Greece. But I took me 3 days out of a 5 day holiday just to, like, then enjoy the 2 days without, mm-hmm. like, and I couldn't believe it was 3 days. Like, I remember lying on a beach. I think I've got it on my. I remember lying on a beach, like, trying to relax in the beautiful sun, and then just going, what is the purpose of my life? Then I had to write it down. I had to write, and there's just a crazy page out of my notebook just being like, the purpose of life, I suppose, is just to have fun. And maybe help other people have fun, enjoy experiences and moments. And the irony of me writing down in this, like, a manic state, just going, just enjoy moments to moments, and like on a beautiful beach in Greece. And it's just like, what the hell? It was so, so frustrating. But exactly, I think I'm distracting myself so much better.
Yeah
I've really. Got to. I have to be busy. If I let my brain speak to me, it's never a good thing.
That's great.
I didn't stop work from Edinburgh this year until about last weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't have a single day off, and I sat down in the, with a coffee, and I just sat there for about 2 minutes. My brain went, you know, we haven't thought about it for a little while. Killing yourself.
Hello.
And I was like, oh,
no,
Christ,
come on, dude. Can I have one moment?
Yeah, it's really when you're busy, Like, I've been saying, like, lately, oh, I'd love a day off. But I also know what it's like to be really lonely and isolated, mm-hmm. especially, like, when I moved to London. And say, especially, like, when I first went full-time with comedy. So I kind of had the gigs in the evening, but I didn't have, like, things like this in the day. Mm-hmm. And the daytimes felt like a prison sentence. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have any friends. So I'd wake up in the day and just be like, cool, yeah, okay, there's another day of this. Oh, okay. And I didn't have any money to, like, go out. I still don't have money to go out and do stuff, but I have a podcast now. I had nothing to do, and I remember like just feeling like I had so, and I thought people would probably crave for this time, but when you have nothing to do with that time, mm-hmm. and nobody to share that time with, it's a bit like, actually I'd rather just work.
Yeah. 100%. I had the exact same thing when I first moved here. I just did comedy, but like I didn't even do that many, I wasn't even gigging too much. Mm-hmm. Like honestly, I heard this in a show once, like I would start like there were days where I wouldn't speak to anyone. Yep. Another, like I wouldn't even use my voice until 6 or 7 p.m.
And then it comes out like,
yeah. It's insanity. And like, and it was just like, oh, and I could have called someone, but I didn't, yeah. you know, and like I would just like, winter is horrible for me in this country. I really can't deal with it. And I would roast vegetables because, and this is the saddest thing, because they took so long to make that I was like, well, I've got something to do now. Yes. Like, you know, I'm like, well, this is going to take at least an hour to roast these vegetables.
That's enough of my day.
Yeah, completely.
I used to go to Tesco just to talk to the security guard.
Oh my God.
Because he was nice to me. I think I was probably nice to him because I'm Northern. So every time I walked in, I'd be like, hiya yeah. in the voice, and I think he liked that I spoke to him, but other than gigs he was the only person he'd speak to with, so I'd sometimes be like, I'm gonna go buy eggs.
Oh my God.
And I did not need eggs.
I feel so taken back to like first 2 years of living in London. Yeah. Like talking about that, it makes me so sad. I feel exactly the same. It was so
and
bad.
You wake up and you're like, well, I'm just gonna write lots of material. Oh my God. Like, you can't sit and write 9 to 6 all day, every day.
No. Some people can, a psychopath. Yeah. It's crazy. Like, why would you do that? And I slept a lot. I still sleep a lot, but I would sleep so much. Mm. And especially in winter, when it would get dark at 4 again. I'm like, well, I have to sleep again.
Yeah. I'd schedule a nap and I'd be like, well, I've been awake an hour. Let's have a little nap.
Yeah. I didn't know that napping too much was a sign of depression.
Is it?
Really? Yeah.
And I was because, like, I most of my days off, I was like, I'll have a nap in the morning, maybe a nap in the afternoon, then maybe a nap about 6. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, that's being depressed. That's just having your life in bed being asleep. It's just like, oh,
it's
shit.
A siesta. No, it's lost depression. That's what it is.
It's crazy. It's so nuts. Yeah, I always find, so I feel so guilty about requiring so much sleep, but then I go online and read, what other famous people required a lot of sleep in their creative lives? And it's like, not really many. Einstein just slept like 2 hours or whatever. You're like, God damn it.
We've got about 5 minutes left if you'd like to ask our last question.
Lovely. Our last question is, if you could go back to your younger self, mm-hmm. and give yourself some advice on mental health and living without misery, what would you tell yourself?
Interesting. What younger self am I going to go back to? I'd go back, I'd have a multi-stop.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I'd go back to little kid Rose, who would like cry myself to sleep before like thinking about death and stuff and go, it's only gonna get worse. No, she actually was fine with it. I think she was probably smarter about it. I go back to teenage Rose and say, stop stressing about small things. And then I'd actually go back to younger self of early 20s, even though I'm 27. I'd probably go back to myself at 21, 22, 23 and say that, probably that period of my life where I moved to London, go outside, go for a walk, go do some activities with other people, go to a dance class or something. I'm still telling myself that. Go swimming or something. I mean, I don't know. And I wouldn't take the advice. This is the irony. That would, like, an amazing, I'd be like, oh my God, it's me from the future. This is incredible. And she'd just be like, hey man, just go for it. I'm like, no, I'm really busy today.
You're kind of interrupting my nap.
Yeah, I've got to roast some vegetables. So I had a lot on. So, you know, but thank you for stopping by. It's amazing. Time travel's real. It's incredible. so I'd probably say that. But I believe that I'm going to come back. Like, I wish older self me could come back to me now and say, stop worrying. Because I know, logically, in my brain, I'm worrying about nothing. It's wasted energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So much of my anxiety is wasted energy. And I know that in 20 years' time, I'm going to be like, why? Why did I waste so much time worrying about things? I should have just enjoyed it. But, you know, I'm nearly 30 and you can't really change your personality after that, apparently. So the clock is ticking. 3 years. 3 years to fundamentally change my personality to be a cool, chill gal. And then I'll be done.
Yeah, you can get a degree in 3 years. I'm sure you can.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I can change. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Life degree.
That's incredible.
Module one, change entire personality.
Fantastic.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you. We hope you can take something from this podcast away with you in your day-to-day life. Whatever situation you're in, you're not by yourself. We can share our stories, share our experiences, we can help each other know that things do get better.
And that's it. That's the episode. Done. That's it. Another interview. Complete. We can all go back to our business, whatever business we're doing today. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to Lauren. Thank you to Rose. And you can go watch Taskmaster now. Go do it. Sod off whatever plans you got. Just binge the whole 9th series of Taskmaster. And what else? Oh, I should probably thank Calm, Dave, and you for being brilliant. Please remember to like, subscribe, rate, review, all of that jazz. All helps to raise money for Calm, and that's why we do this weird little podcast. And I think that's all I need to say. I think that's it for today. You have a lovely day, and go do whatever the hell you want to do. Go have a laugh about something. Right, that's enough about me. Or from me. Oh, I'm going to shut the fuck up. Bye, 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 bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Would you give your mum, dad, aunt, or that uncle who hugged your partner a little too long free access to your phone?
Oh, no! Oh, my God, it's a really long video. Ew!
In Dave's brand new YouTube original, Get Off My Phone, we've got 6 comedians to give their phones over to a relative with total freedom to read messages, DMs, photos, and browser history.
Where's your search history?
Sorry?
What to do, tips for relief.
The rules are simple. Their relative can read anything they want and even make calls from the comedian's phone.
What is this? What is...
I know what this one is.
That looks really bad.
Starring Tanya Moore, Anya Magliano, Finlay Christie, Travis J with his mum Angie Lamar, Hayley Morris, Grace Campbell and dad Alistair Campbell.
Slightly sexually compromising people.
Divulging their deepest digital secrets.
What the hell is happening?
Get Off My Phone, a Dave YouTube original. Available now on Dave's YouTube channel.